Welcome to Focus on Education, a podcast from the Center for Educational Practice at Union University's School of Education.
Today is March 7th, 2014, and this is Eric Marvin, the director of the Roseboro Center for Educational Practice at Union University's School of Education. Today on the Focus on Education podcast, Dr. Tom Roseboro will be our guest. Dr. Roseboro serves as the honorary namesake for the Roseboro Center for Educational Practice, and so we're certainly honored that he has agreed to be a part of this episode today. But Dr. Roseboro also serves as the executive dean of the College of Education and Human Studies at Union University. He is also a university professor of education, and he is the lead author of a book written with Dr. Ralph Leverett. The book is titled Transformational Teaching in the Information Age, Making Why and How We Teach Relevant to Students. The book is published by ASCD. We're going to sit down and talk with Dr. Roseboro about why they wrote Transformational Teaching. I think it'll prove to be a very meaningful session on the current culture and future of education. Dr. Roseboro, we appreciate you taking the time to be here today as a part of this episode of Focus on Education.
Thank you, Eric. It's good to be here.
As we get started today, I kind of wanted to start with a foundational question for those in our listening audience who perhaps are not familiar with transformational teaching. If you don't mind explaining to us, what does it mean to be a transformational teacher?
Well, if you look up the textbook definition that's in the appendix of the book, Transformational Teaching, it says something like a pedagogy that teaches for change with convictions about holism and deeper understanding in learning goals. And as I said, that's the textbook definition, but I would go in a little deeper than that and say that it is teaching that prioritizes the learner with high expectations academically, socially, and spiritually. And then maybe go on a little further than that and say it is teaching that subsumes what we call informational teaching by seeking to connect to the needs and unique potential of individual students. And the book is really meant to be a study in contrast between informational teaching and transformational teaching. Informational teaching is a necessary practice to where teachers want to convey information. It's why the Common Core standards are popular among a lot of folks, because it does point to higher expectations in terms of learning content. But that is necessary and not sufficient. Our idea is that transformational teaching not only does that, but it also seeks to bring in the individual student and focus on that student.
All right. I think that gives us a better understanding of what we mean by transformational teaching and the contrast that you're making there in terms of informational teaching. As we move forward and dig a little bit deeper, we realize that authors, when they write a book, often have a underlying reason and motivation behind that. And so let's dig into that a little bit deeper. Why did you write Transformational Teaching?
Well, it certainly came out of the backgrounds of Dr. Leverett and my background. Any time you ask an author about the rationale for writing a book, there is quite a bit there, and I won't go into great depth about that. But I guess one way of saying it is that I think for both Dr. Leverett and me, the book came out of not just something we know, but it came out of something that we believe very deeply. We think that education should have a priority of focusing on somebody instead of something. And we set up a model called the Transformational Pedagogy Model, which looks like a target, if you will, with rings on it. And in the center of that target, in the center of that model, is the learner. And it was our concern that, especially beginning in the 21st century, with No Child Left Behind and now with Race to the Top, which you don't hear very much about anymore, but that what policymakers were doing and have done is they have placed subject matter in the center of that model. And we simply wanted to point out that that has profound implications for the kind of education that our children are receiving. And so certainly the motivation for the book, as I said, is not only knowledge, but it's a belief system. And I think I was inspired by some things that I read along the way, obviously things that I kind of agreed with. For example, someone out of the psychology department gave me a copy of a book called The Divine Conspiracy by Dallas Willard, who is a renowned theologian, was a renowned theologian. He died just recently. And I ran across a page in his book, early part of the first decade of the 21st century, that reads something like this. He says, "In our day, learners usually think of themselves as containers of some sort, with a purely passive space to be filled by the information the teacher possesses and wishes to transfer, the from jug to mug model. The teacher is to fill the empty parts of the receptacle with the truth that may or may not later make some difference to the life of the one who has it. The teacher must get the information into them, and we then test the patients to see if they got it by checking whether they can reproduce it in language rather than watching how they live." And Willard asserts that the goal in the time of Jesus was not to impart information, but to make a significant change in the lives of the hearers. And so when you focus on the word change, you come up with also the word transform. And the idea has been, for me as well as for Ralph Levert for a long time, that education is about changing lives. And we don't do that just with information. We do it with inspiration as well. And then there was one other reading that I ran across along about 2006 in Newsweek magazine, where one of the writers was conducting an interview of the education minister of Singapore. And the country of Singapore at that time was leading the world in reading and math test scores, in what we call achievement. And it was striking to listen to or to read about the interview that was conducted by an American writer in Newsweek and hear the Minister of Education say this. He said, "We both have meritocracies. Yours is a talent meritocracy. Ours is an exam meritocracy. There are parts of the intellect that we are not able to test well, like creativity, curiosity, a sense of adventure, ambition. Most of all, America has a culture of learning that challenges conventional wisdom, even if it means challenging authority. These are the areas where Singapore must learn from America." And so what struck me when I read that was the supreme irony of our country and its policymakers trying to emulate an Asian country like Singapore while they were trying to emulate us. And the paradox of that is striking. And then I think not only conviction, and I think sometimes convictions are born out of the emotion of anger, if you will, at what we thought was being done to the educational systems in our country, that they were out of balance. And that if you read the book, you'll see that we try to say that balance is important not only in life, but it's important in education. So I hope that gives you a little bit of a snapshot of what motivated us to write Transformational Teaching.
It does. And as I've listened to what you're saying there, you're kind of emphasizing some very important words there, talking about the importance of educating somebody as opposed to something, and about transforming lives and actually changing lives as opposed to just perhaps focusing on the content and putting more emphasis on the work of students and them as individuals. If you don't mind, I wouldn't mind taking a look at your book and the chapters in the text. They actually are, if I'm going to read those for our listening audience, it says chapter one is inspire your students. Two is embrace your role as a whole teacher, followed by teach the whole student, place students in the center. Chapter five, teach for learning. Six being know how students learn, then teach students how to learn, and then finally teach by asking questions. Expounding on what you have shared with us already, can you delve a little bit deeper into what the book is all about based on these chapter titles?
Well, I think one way that I could summarize it is that the book is about the three P's of education. The three P's would be educational philosophy, educational psychology, and pedagogy. So philosophy, psychology, and pedagogy actually make up the discipline of education itself. And then as you go through the book, which is divided into two larger sections, which basically has to do with why and how, why we teach and how we teach, you can begin to get a sense about all three of those areas, beginning with philosophy. Philosophy does ask us the question, why? And in education and educational philosophy, we think it's important, particularly in these tumultuous times in education in the United States especially, that we get back to the basics of asking, why do we teach? Why do we do this anyway? What really matters in education follows a question like that. And we try to delve into that as we talk about whole learning, the whole child. We make an audacious statement that it takes a whole teacher to teach a whole child. And our definition of a whole teacher is someone who is a teacher scholar. That means that they are confident in their subject. And someone who is a teacher practitioner, that means they vary their methods. They know how to teach. But then we added a third area that we thought was often missing in the realm of education, and that is the teacher relator. And we chose the word relator to connote relationships. We think that it's important that teachers at all levels communicate that they care about the individuality, the personhood, if you will, even the spiritual makeup. What makes that person the individual that they are, the individual potential that they have? So all that goes into philosophy, and we try to make that philosophy as practical as possible with examples in the first part of the book. But then we go into educational psychology. And for example, chapter six in the book focuses on how people learn. And it's not a long chapter. we hope it's not arduous in going into theories like Jean Piaget and Lev Vygotsky and brain-based learning and things like that. We give lots of examples, but it's the absolute foundation of how people learn. And we lose track in education sometimes by focusing on how teachers teach instead of how students learn, which seems to me is why we're there. We are there for the students. We think that how teachers teach ought to be based on how students learn. And then the third P in the trilogy that I mentioned is pedagogy. And so the latter part of the book deals with how we teach, how should we teach, and we posit a pedagogical continuum with inquiry on one end and exposition on the other end and discussion in the middle. We talk about guided inquiry learning. We talk about how important it is to ask good questions. We talk about our goal of building lifelong learning, that we want learners to be self-directed. So I hope that's a quick summary of what the book is about for us, and we have tried to make it certainly a theory into practice book, but we began with why and we moved to how in the book in order to sum up transformational teaching.
I think you would agree with me that most classroom teachers realize that there is a huge responsibility and they have a tremendous amount of pressure on them. And I think that they realize that they are teaching children. And for many of them, that's the reason they chose to go into this field in the first place. But in the introduction of your text, you describe our current system of education by saying this. I'm going to quote that introduction. "The thinking in classrooms has generally gone like this. We have subject matter to cover, not enough time to do it well, and the test is looming and daunting because successful schooling now seems to be mostly about raising achievement scores." End quote. Thinking about this, there are plenty of people and plenty of policies that are being implemented that are focusing on this idea of raising achievement scores. And there are many people out there, including many of our listeners, who may question this idea and may say, well, what is wrong with making achievement our nation's educational priority? How would you answer them?
We're aiming too low, is how I would answer them. Achievement is the floor and not the ceiling. I think we should just fire right back and say, why settle for less? Why would we want just to pour content into people's heads and then test them to see if they got it and then move on to the next standard or to the next grade? That's a very mechanized information age point of view that completely rules out the individuality of the learner. I ran across a book by Rudd and Garrison called Teaching with Reverence. I'll read a quote from it that I think sums up some of my feelings, and they say it better than I do. They say, "Current public discourse about teaching concerns what skills and knowledge teachers need to know and to teach, and testing students to see if they have been taught. These are worthy but minimal goals for education. Good teaching involves forming character, molding destinies, creating an enduring passion for learning, appreciating beauty, respecting silence, caring for others, and much more. When done well, teaching cultivates human intimacy and allows teachers to find creative self-expression with others in a classroom community." So just simply said, I want it all. Ralph Levin and I, in writing the book, probably said that to each other quite a bit over lunch discussions. Why would we want to settle for a test-driven school culture that is fraught with expiration dates? We want to focus on students without expiration dates who are lifelong learners.
I think that's a very interesting perspective, and I think that there's many educators who would be enlightened by your words that we are aiming too low. I think most folks would think that this is kind of an either-or option, that you don't necessarily can have it all. But why is it that you believe that education should be more about something more than just intellectual pursuits?
Well, I have come to realize it's not just me that thinks that way. It's a lot of high-powered people. One of the events that we had at Union a few years ago was inviting then Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice to come and speak to us. And as I was listening to her speech, and anyone that knows about the story of Condoleezza Rice coming out of Birmingham, Alabama, and overcoming the kind of segregation that was there and lack of opportunity that was not provided, and her through the power of education coming to the point where she has a PhD in Russian history, Russian politics, rising to being a national security advisor and then Secretary of State for 8 years in the United States, by any measure, one of the brightest people around. But one of the things that she said in the speech is that we have to come to realize that education is so much more than the intellect. Mm-hmm. And it struck me, especially coming from her. There are other famous people that talk along this same vein, and I'll go back 100 years to Maria Montessori, who's arguably the most renowned early childhood educator ever. And she expressed her famous Montessori method as having discovered the world within the soul of the child. She wasn't looking at the intellect of the child. She was looking at the soul of the child. So what is it that makes us unique? Is there something beyond the mind? Perhaps there is. We think certainly there is, and that we should teach to that because it subsumes the mind. It is everything that a person is. And that's one of the points that we make, is that inspiration comes before information.
If you don't mind, I wouldn't mind taking a look at another quote from the book. In the text, you also write this. It says, "The grand scheme of U.S. education in the 21st century, indeed globally, would seem to deny a more holistic perspective on what we might generally refer to as respect for the learner. Results-oriented education is in vogue, with test scores serving as not only evidence of learning, but learning itself." End quote. Now, there is no doubt that our current educational policies are putting a very heavy emphasis on testing, and that many outside of education tend to like the measurable, the quantifiable evidence that such results provide. As you say that we need to be moving in a different direction with education, perhaps looking more holistically at children, what is the alternative to a test-heavy approach that will perhaps embrace learning yet still respect learners?
Well, a test-heavy approach is expediency. It is trying to find easy answers to a very complex question. And the complex question is, how do people learn? And to think that we can measure everything there is to know about what learning is rather short-sighted, in my view. In fact, one of the frustrations is that we are in a culture right now where so much of what we have learned about teaching and learning is being ignored. We just spent the 20th century studying what teaching and learning is. There is a huge body of research from from the 20th century, which has continued into the 21st century, especially in the discipline of education, which gives us insight into what learning is and what good teaching is and what our goals ought to be, and to default to the notion that a test score in and of itself is going to tell us everything that we need to know about a country or a school or a child is very short-sighted. The alternative, in my view, to the test-heavy approach is to teach for inspiration, first of all, that learners want to be inspired to learn. It's already built into them, motivated to be curious about things, but school has a way of killing that if we're not careful. So first of all, they need to be inspired. But secondly, we need to understand that learning is a process. It's not a product. The product of a test score is what it is, but the process that leads to higher test scores is what is important. And so the question becomes, what kind of process leads to engaging learners? And we, in the latter part of the book, we posit what we call strategic learning qualities. And there's no great mystery about these qualities. They are qualities of educated people. They're qualities like openness, skepticism, civility, persistence, imagination, curiosity. We call these strategic learning qualities because we think that these are byproducts of a good process. A good process where a teacher kind of takes a back seat in the teaching and learning dynamic. That is, they ask the questions, they guide the instruction, but they allow the students to gather information and answer questions that the teacher has posed. If there was ever a time in the history of the world where we should be using a guided inquiry process, such as I'm describing right now, it is now, because information is literally at our students' fingertips. So the idea is, we want our students to be self-directed. We want them to be independent learners. But if we set up a system where students move from one test to the next based on content that they have memorized, instead of focusing on the development of the individual human learning potential of that student, I think we have made a great mistake. So the alternative is to focus on process instead of product.
There is great relevance for that, and I think there's great relevance, as you're indicating, for the current time in which we live. And educators and teachers are challenged every day, being confronted with their test results and how that impacts the decisions that they make. But it is nonetheless a very meaningful perspective that we find in transformational teaching in the information age, as you have described for us here today. I wanted to ask you one final question here as a part of this conversation, and that goes back to your involvement here at Union University. And for a long time, the university has had centers, and the center that I have the privilege of serving as the director of has been known as the Center for Educational Practice. But during President Dockery's work here and service at Union University, he made you the honorary namesake of the center, and so it is henceforth referred to as the Roseboro Center for Educational Practice. What does that mean to you?
Well, I want to say that perhaps he made a big mistake.
I doubt that.
My parents gave me my name, and it's something that I take with me everywhere I go, and to have my name placed on something that is important at Union University is a very humbling experience, and one that I hope that I can live up to.
Well, I will say that we are certainly blessed that that the center does carry your name, and I'm grateful to have the opportunity to work under your leadership as well. Thank you for taking the time to sit down with us today as a part of the Focus on Education podcast. As a reminder to our listeners, Dr. Roseborough and Leverett's book is titled Transformational Teaching in the Information Age, Making Why and How We Teach Relevant to Students.
This has been the Focus on Education podcast. Visit uu.edu/centers/edpractice to learn more about the Center for Educational Practice and Union University's School of Education.